See, no. Steven, is this another one of those, you know, no offense, one of those weird things that you do?
Spitting for sure.
One of the really weird things
that you do and you need to stop.
Instead of spitting your gum into the trash can that's less than a foot away from you, you insist on swallowing it instead. Is this just, was there a point where, you know, you were trying to spit your gum into the trash can, but then
someone punched me, yeah, and I was like,
and then you swallowed it, and now you're afraid to ever try and spit gum into a trash can.
Yeah, someone's going
to
punch me again.
He hated the chore of having to take the trash out, so he was finding everywhere else to put his garbage.
Every little bit helps.
He's got garbage hidden all over this apartment.
Brian, you are my roommate. You know this is true.
Yeah, I know.
You're just stating facts.
It's really scary, actually. I got out of there.
That's why he left. That's why I'm not with him. I miss you, Ryan.
That's kind of sad.
All right. Let's do this. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of From Under a Rock, the podcast where the four of us, but this week it's five, watch a movie that one or more of us hasn't seen, bringing us all out from under the proverbial rock. Rock, rock, rock. My name's Steven Zarita, and
I'm Ryan Evans. Hopefully bringing some of you listeners out from under the rock as well.
Yeah, it's about all of us.
I'm Michael Ornelas.
I'm James McAnally, a.k.a. McDoodles.
And we are joined by a special guest for the first time in a long time.
Hello.
You want to introduce yourself there?
I am Mark W. Gray. Hi, guys. How's it going?
It's going.
It's going well.
Very well, sir. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm an honor to be part of, what's this called? From Under a Rock?
From Under a Rock.
Foire.
If you want to...
Foire.
We sometimes pronounce the acronym as Foire, yes.
Foire. Well, yeah. Thank you for having me on Foire.
It's getting fresher.
It's a hard F. It's not a silent F.
Foir.
There you go.
Okay, got it.
So, Mark, this week you brought us the movie Doctor Strangelove as part of our theme of favorite movies of all time. This is one of your top favorites.
This is one of my. It's in the top dozen or so, but I thought it might be the one the fewest of you had seen.
Yeah.
You know, I think probably my favorite movie of all time has got to be It's a Wonderful Life, but that is on a lot. You get a lot of chances.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it? Oh. Yeah. Well, you're in for a treat, young man, because
it's not in season right now.
No.
It's a Christmas movie, but I think it's super timeless. But Dr. Strangelove, we watched today, it's just a beautiful film. It's my favorite Kubrick movie by a damn sight, and it's my favorite nuclear war movie, and my favorite Peter Sellers movie, and, you know, one of the best black and white looking movies. I mean, visually, one of my favorite movies in black and white.
So this tops all the charts for you.
I don't know. It checks a lot of boxes.
It
sure.
Cleans up at the Mark Gray Awards.
Sure. Yeah. Are you coming to the Mark Gray Awards this year? I hear it's really hard to get tickets.
I didn't get invited. I don't know about you guys.
Keep hope alive. Maybe next year.
Okay.
I hang out outside just hoping that I can spot stars and maybe sneak in if they're careless with the door.
We are looking for seat fillers. Yeah. So, you know.
You can be a Jack Black seat filler.
Perfect.
So, Mark, before we dive into the discussion, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and what you do on this crazy, crazy world wide web?
Where do I begin? I've been, I'm older than you guys by about 100%.
You don't look it.
Oh, and I went to film school a long time ago, as most of you guys did, right? You guys?
All of us. Yeah.
Film school chums from Texas, right?
Right.
Indeed.
I went to USC right here in California.
Nice.
In the 1980s. So a lot of the films you saw, like...
All right, maybe you are older than us.
When you were a very small child, I saw, like, you know, when I got out of film school, and so I could, like, hate them properly, and you might... Like, Goonies, for example. I think everyone who's your age seems to really love Goonies. Yeah.
I hate Goonies.
Okay, I'm with you. I hate Goonies.
Well, he's old as well.
So. That's true.
I watched it as a kid, but I never really got into it. I don't know.
But that's a whole other discussion.
Up, James.
But I've worked in movies for a long time. I've been a cinematographer. I've shot about a dozen feature films. I've worked as a cameraman on TV shows and reality shows. And lately, it's mostly been what we call content more than movies, you know, like YouTube stuff.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I've got a couple of YouTube channels that are on the grow. Professor Puppet is the main one. Mm-hmm. You guys might know Professor Puppet.
I did a little collab with you guys. Yeah.
And I've done... about 400 YouTube videos of Professor Puppet, but about 7,000 Fiverr videos. You know what that is?
Oh yeah, you're on Fiverr?
I'm on Fiverr. Yeah,
oh, fantastic.
Fiverr?
Are you do Professor Puppet?
I do Professor Puppet videos on Fiverr. Because Fiverr, okay, what's Fiverr? It's FIVERR.com, okay? It's a place where you buy and sell things and services for $5. Like everything on there, you can buy some form of it for $5. And there's people doing, you know, video testimonials and artwork and making videos and making, you know, music for you or drawing pictures. And I have a puppet that I do videos with, Professor Puppet, and I am the top puppet on Fiverr. I've sold 7,000 videos on Fiverr. And for $5, I can make you a video under 120 words, one take. And the way that's profitable is I can do it in about 2 minutes. You know, if you want me to take longer, you have a longer script, you want HD, you want the green screen, you want something else, that, you know, the upcharges start to pile up.
Is anything off limits?
Yes, absolutely. Lots of things are off limits. Like one thing I get all the time that I always say no to is when people try to write a script where Professor Puppet is talking as if it's his business he's advertising. Like, I personally guarantee you will love this weight loss formula that I invented.
Gotcha.
Never will I say that. I'll say, this is great, this is works, this is fantastic, but I'll never say, call right now and I'll send this to you, because I don't want to be accountable for it,
sure.
And it's bullshit, you know, and I don't want to kind of, there's so many commercials with Professor Puppet for all kinds of bullshit that's probably not worth anything, but I don't say that I will be delivering it or I stand behind any of these products,
right.
So, you know, my favorite one ever, since you didn't ask, like the third or fourth one I ever did was a thing called HymanShop.com.
Oh man. Perfect.
HymanShop.com. It's a little capsule of fake blood that I'm not kidding.
That a woman
would insert into her lady parts when penetrated on her allegedly virginal wedding night, it would break and this red blood like stuff would come out, and then they could go and show the sheet to the people downstairs or whatever crazy country they're from that wants to see that, and they go, "Yep, she's virgin. It's good, yeah." You know, and the kit, it costs like $10, and you get two of them. I guess one for practice, you know, because you want to see how it's going to go. But HymanShop.com, and the guy didn't write a script either. He just sent me the link to HymanShop.com, and so I kind of ad libbed the script. I should get that for you, and you cut it in. It's one of my favorite commercials I ever did.
Oh man!
But that was like 4 years ago now.
Wow. You know, did you pull your hand out of the puppet and it had blood on it?
Oh, no. So many things wrong with that idea. So many things.
I remember reading a news story years ago about that you can actually perform surgeries to achieve the same effect.
You can have your
hymen to reconstruct the hymen.
The virgin restoration.
And they were painting it in a positive light, saying this woman... it was an anniversary gift for her husband.
Oh my God.
Experience it like the first time again.
Well, okay. There's that sort of weird kind of backward must be a virgin thing of having the hymen. But there's also the vaginal reconstruction, which is a more of a thing after you've had kids, as a middle-aged guy who has kids and knows about these things. It's kind of gets a little bit loose down there. Like what Borat would say, like sleeve of wizard, and you can get that tightened back up.
Still haven't seen that movie.
You know,
Borat.
Really? Haven't seen it.
That might be a future pick.
That and Wedding Crashers.
Awesome.
Stop begging for Wedding Crashers.
All right, don't worry. Right, I will pick it. I love that movie.
Please. Must not have been on an airplane during that year when that came out.
I don't think. Yeah.
Speaking of picks, let's dive into this week's.
Leave the segues to me, Steve.
Okay, Ryan, segue us.
Speaking of picks.
Speaking of segues.
Speaking of hymens.
We broke our Dr. Strangelove cherry, or at least a couple of us did, Stephen and Michael.
I can show you the bed sheet.
please don't. Well, now I don't know.
We were all huddled into the bed. It was gross.
Now I don't know if you're faking it or not. But
you'll never know.
So yeah, this Stephen, if you want to tell us a little bit about Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Me? Okay.
Please, yeah.
As the
oh, I'm sorry.
Didn't. Yes.
Mark, you brought it for us.
Oh yeah, thanks.
You should tell us about it.
No, but what's your impression, Stephen? Why don't you tell us? No, this is Stanley Kubrick's film from 1963 at the height of the Cold War about a rogue wing commander of a squadron of B-52s that sends them in to attack Russia on nuclear war because he's gone completely loco, and it's going to start World War III because he thinks it's winnable, and that's his idea. And then it's in great detail just all of the steps that happened to try to bring it back and try to make it not happen, try to figure out what it is. And it's very fascinating. It's very satirical and has a lot of... it's just the thing that I enjoy most about it is the way they take so much time to have every conversation. Like, no one ever panics mm-hmm. about anything. They just go really slow and give everyone time. No one really interrupts anyone. They just talk really slow and drag it all out. And you're just pulling your hair out thinking, they're coming. The nuclear war is happening in real time, guys. Come on. And the other amazing thing is that about half the characters are played by Peter Sellers, mm-hmm. who is... remember Peter Sellers? He was in the Pink Panther mm-hmm. and a bunch of other things. And he would have played the pilot of the airplane as well, except he broke his leg and couldn't get into the ship, couldn't get into the plane. So they got, what's his name, Slim Pickens instead. Mm-hmm. Though in the biopic about Peter Sellers, they made it seem like he just didn't want to do that because he couldn't come up with a good Texas accent. Uh-huh. So he faked this broken leg. So that he wouldn't have, so he couldn't do it. Oh no, sorry, you got to get somebody else. Sorry, mate, in English.
Of course. But
Slim Pickens was fantastic.
Amazing. It's one of my favorite parts of the movie for sure.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just his performance.
He's so good. He's so laconic.
I loved kind of the juxtaposition that his character is where he's just this kind of down to earth cowboy. You know, he wears this cowboy hat throughout the mission. But he also has an intense technical knowledge of the bomb and the plane and the workings of his crew and the attack plan are and everything.
Oh, yeah. They're all super professional.
A far cry from his character in Blazing Saddles, which we watched the other week.
I think you boys have had enough.
I really liked how, as you were saying, how everything's sort of drawn out in terms of the conversations between all these characters. As you know, impending... you know, apocalyptic, cataclysmic nuclear warfare is about to happen. I mean, you definitely see it come through in a lot of the British guy who's
Mandrake.
And the president. They start to like get a little fidgety, and especially when the president is talking to Dimitri. but I think it really plays on the strength of, you know, like. It's bureaucratic almost in how everything's, you know, taken care of, and I really. Can almost see something like that happening. It's like, well, this can't happen because this is already like everybody shuts down the base and they set up a perimeter. We can't go in there and talk to them. It's like, well, what about the phone lines? Phone lines are down. Everything, like every option is presented to you.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
Yeah. The slow pace, as you're saying, it's methodical in the many ways it goes to telling the viewers, they're exploring every option. Nothing is working out of this, intensely freakish series of coincidences.
CRM 114.
Just fail safes right within fail safes, which is
and it's all the fail safes.
Yeah,
that fuck them over.
That's, which is very interesting.
Yeah,
when
it's
you think
all the
about
safety
it.
Precautions that that's what they're hoisted on their own petard mm-hmm. right the way along. But I noticed the details are so great in mm-hmm. the plane, all the machines, and right at the very beginning, because I've seen this a bunch of times. I noticed tonight every. Switch in the plane that has the name on it of the thing they're talking mm-hmm. about, and it's all just exactly specific, you know, that it all ends up being story. Like every one of those stupid inserts in the first act where they're flipping switches and stuff is all like spot on.
And this ties into the cinematography of the movie as well, just how amazingly shot it is, where you see so much detail, and it's shot in it's shot seriously when it needs to be, but it's also got a, you know, just the camera motions itself have a comedic styling to them whenever it calls for it.
Oh, yeah. It's very
such
whimsical
as the,
sometimes.
You know, quick zooms and whip pans and stuff like that.
Well, it starts right off with the plane fueling the other plane, mm-hmm. just like these two planes having sex in that stratosphere. And they're playing Try a Little Tenderness on violins. And it's this kind of love ballad between these two bombers, you know?
You can just see Kubrick, like, giggling to himself.
Oh, yeah. He's such a weird dude. He's just stern, weird dude that, like, when he has a sense of humor,
he's kind of insane. Actually.
So dry.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. And what I noticed about it is the cutting, because there's some scenes where there's just no cut. It's just one shot for mm-hmm. three or four pages or more. like where the girl answers the phone for Turgeson, mm-hmm. and he's taking a shit, I guess. And it's just this beautiful hotel room that's all mirrors. You just see this girl in a bikini and this huge empty space. And you keep hearing him off screen for like the whole conversation. And then finally, he comes out and picks up the phone and talks. And we learn all this stuff about the nuclear war, about what's happened. And then finally, after they get off the phone, she wants to like have more sex. And he's like, oh, I'll be right back, baby. Don't worry. And the camera finally like dips down into this closer shot of the two of them on the bed before it cuts, you know, to the next scene.
Yeah.
You know, no edits at all. But then when we get into Colonel Jack D. Ripper's office, there's a lot of cuts. A lot of his scenes have many, many cuts.
Yeah.
You know, and lots of angles. Like up, like the first time you see him, every line is from a different angle, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Not even just cutting back and forth. It's just like a low shot, then a shot from the side, then a shot from the front, then a wide shot. And it's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. Visually,
especially with when dealing with that character in particular,
yeah,
you know, just so much, like you really start to realize, and I feel like it's subconscious. And now that you mention the art of the cut, it just seems like it tailors to his sort of almost fragmented paranoia, psychotic.
But like
tendencies.
His office, it's all super still. And it's got the one or two light sources, and it's just really, the camera's really still. But then when you cut to the plane, everything's handheld and bouncing around, and there's lens flares. Mm. There's lights in the lens all the time. And that feels really real. And when you're in the battlefield outside, when they're all trying to, they're trying to attack the base, then, you know, it's also handheld. It feels like a documentary. It feels like that's all really real. Like the war is real for these guys who are fighting it. But it's totally not real for the war room, where it's like a beautiful painting. You know, everything's just huge and vast and clean. Sterile, you know.
So all of my favorite scenes in that movie were in the war room.
Oh yeah,
I loved everything that they did in there. The long conversations, just I don't know. It kind of goes against the typical rule of show don't tell. Like they're just sitting there talking for almost all of it, and I love hearing them try and fix this problem, and they can't.
Yeah, they keep just talking it out. Yeah. Like, but no one is like coming up with solutions. It's like the president has to think of everything.
I like that they do go against the show don't tell in that scene, because when the country is run by a bunch of guys sitting at a table, that's kind of just what it is. They have to tell someone else to do it, but they're still the ones in charge. I want to talk about that set a little more, because about a year or two ago, Ryan and I and a couple other friends went to the Stanley Kubrick exhibit while it was over at LACMA. And I hadn't seen this movie, obviously, yet, but I'd seen a couple other Stanley Kubrick films. So I was like, oh, The Shining. Oh, 2001, looking at all these props. And I stopped by the a diorama, like a miniature of set.
Cool.
And then the miniature is obviously in color and stuff. So I'm going to have to pull it up, just because when I finally got to see this, it took me about a minute into the scene when I was like, wait a second.
Oh, that's that model.
Yeah, that's the model I saw. Oh, my God. And I started to link everything. And I mean, it was so much cooler to see it on screen here just now, because I've seen that set or sets that look a lot like it in a lot of other movies since then.
Well, this is the first one. This was like the Super Friends had a set like this, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
And anything where the whole world is being put on a big screen and it's, you know, people are running it. But yeah, they invented this, the whole round table.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is a real thing like this, if there's a real war room. I mean, the real war room is much smaller.
Oh, I bet.
You see like pictures of Hillary Clinton in it and stuff, and to Secretary of State, and it's like a kind of a conference room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just has the screens on the walls and everything. But I made a short film about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, called The Legends of Show Business. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole scene in the war room. It's an animated film I made. And I had to go study this. I had to really kind of deconstruct, like, what's going on here? And I realized that one side of the room is all screens, and the other side of the room is all projectors. And I didn't realize that's what those weird shafts of light for all the cigarette smoke and all these things, that's meant to be the projectors that are projecting all these maps with the moving airplanes and stuff on the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Like they invented the way to actually really have this room. It's not like there's, you know, video screens. They didn't really have giant video screens back then. This is like a analog projector with another projector projecting little dots.
Yeah.
Kind of like a planetarium or something. Mm-hmm. Which is probably a real thing, or was in the 60s anyway.
And it has that crazy slanted roof, which you can't notice too much in this. But after seeing that miniature, I was like, oh, there's the slanted roof. I'm going to have to send you a picture of it, just because it's really cool seeing it in its entirety all at once.
And then there's a buffet across the back. Yeah. You see like two shots. It's full of catering.
Fighting. Gentlemen, you can't fight
in
here. This is the war room.
You know, the original ending of this film that got cut off, that they shot, it ended with a huge pie fight.
Oh my gosh.
Like, dude, why didn't they keep that in?
Well, because you could find this. You could see, I don't know if you could see the actual footage. I think it's been destroyed, but you can see stills of George C. Scott and all the characters covered in whipped cream from this giant pie fight because the Russians over there taking pictures.
Yeah. Right.
And they go, oh, stop him. And they all just start throwing pies at each other. And it becomes this total insanity. Like the Three Stooges.
Oh, man, I wish they had kept that in because it's a nice like little analogy, I guess.
Maybe even intercut with images of the bombs going down.
You know? like if I throw a pie and then you just see a bomb or a bomb drops and then you get hit in the face.
It's like that one episode of SpongeBob.
Do
you remember that? Throws a pie in his face. Nuclear explosion.
Yes. SpongeBob, man. I gotta watch some of those old ones. Normally, if you said, oh, this movie ends with a pie fight, I'd be like, oh, my, that is such a cheap, like, that's not funny. But this movie, like, not only do, like, the stakes escalate with, oh, they start this protocol, and now they can't reach the plane, and now, you know, this doomsday device. Oh, we're spoiling everything.
Spoilers guaranteed.
But the comedy escalates, too, because it starts off, you know, fairly seriously. But then once we get to the president on the phone with
Dimitri.
I mean, hello, it gets funnier and funnier.
I'm fine. You're fine too, then? Good. We're both fine.
It's fine being fine. There's a gag where someone gets sprayed in the face with Coca-Cola. I mean, like, it keeps escalating. So, yeah, it makes sense. Like, it should have ended with a pie fight.
It gets a little bit more slapstick towards the end.
Oh, no, it totally works.
What I found really interesting, like, I didn't expect laughs in this movie. I didn't know what to expect coming in, but I thought it was just a serious movie.
Like all of other Stanley Kubrick's movies.
Right. I thought I was going to leave this movie depressed, and I still did. But
Thanks, Stanley.
I didn't expect to laugh as much as I did. And I'm glad it didn't end with the pie fight because my preferred taste in comedy, at least these days, is very grounded with kind of a weird premise, something that's kind of out there. And a lot of the things in this, you got that they were playing a lot of things straight. And then they did start getting a little bit more slapsticky later on. But the things that I found funnier were things that were delivered completely straight faced and just treated like this is the reality.
Well, yeah, like everyone has a ridiculous name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in a lot of movies, you name the character to describe who they are, right?
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise in Risky Business is named Joel Goodson.
Yeah.
Okay. And sometimes it's, you know, less obvious than that. But yeah, you've got Murdered Muffly. Is the president. President Murdered Muffly. You've got Premier Kissoff, who's the Soviet premier. You've got Jack D. Ripper, who's the guy who sends the wing in. Group W. Mandrake is the British guy. That's the thing. And then Colonel Batguano.
I thought he was making that up. I thought he was insulting
him. If that is your real name.
That's Colonel Batguano, if that is your real name. Wow, so great. And there's some other ones too. And then Buck Turgidson.
Yeah.
he's like a living erect penis, you know.
Yeah.
He was actually my favorite character.
Me as well. You'll see everything.
You'll see the big board.
He took everything so seriously. Like he believed in every word that he said. It was just hilarious hearing his point of view.
Well, I feel like that's everybody in this movie. Everybody believes and acts according to those beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so funny. Is because
all this tension, all the conflict.
Yeah, and you see sort of the weird frivolity behind it, and like everybody is so set. Like, I feel like even if you remove the comedy aspects of this movie, every one of those characters and their names would have done the exact same thing that they did throughout the course of this movie, except maybe writing on the nuclear bomb. But hey, if you're already on the nuclear bomb and it drops, you might as well make a show.
That's the other thing. Those guys are in that bomber, right? And they're there. Their job is to drop atom bombs on people, right? But they kind of, the way nuclear weapons work is they only are supposed to exist as deterrents, right? They're supposed to only exist so that the other guys don't use them on you. And they're meant to, they have to be able to work, but they're meant to never be used. That's sort of the idea. Mm-hmm. So I guess you're riding around in a B-52, and your job is to take it seriously and drop the bombs when they tell you to. But you got to think that when the order actually came in, you would go, I'm not dropping any fucking bombs.
Yeah. Are you serious? And that's why they ask for confirmation.
Yeah.
And they do take it. Yeah. And they go, but then they realize we don't have enough fuel to get back. All we're going to do is drop these bombs, and then we're going to ditch. We're all going to die. But no one has like an existential moment where they go, I don't want to die. Let's go back. Come on, guys. You know, no one ever chickens out. They like stick to their job. So when Kong is down there trying to fix the thing, he succeeds. He's like, God damn it, I want to drop a bomb on something, you know? Yeah. Came all this way, you know, and then when he rides it down, it's just it's the perfect ending. It's like a giant penis coming out.
Oh, it's such an iconic shot. In cinema, you know, like everybody's seen that image, whether it be in this movie or like Simpsons parodies what have you.
I think it was on a poster at some point.
And it also, I love that it didn't just happen. They earned that moment. Like they've developed that character and all the characters enough to where like, okay, we know this is going to happen. And now he's riding the bomb and I totally buy it. Where if I had known that was going to be a thing similar to your point with the pie fight, Steven, like had I known that was going to happen in the movie coming in, I would have been like, oh, that's kind of stupid. A guy rides an atomic bomb.
So you didn't see that coming. You did react. You kind of whooped a little bit.
Yeah, like, everybody's like, whoa.
I definitely heard Steven or Michael or both of you give a little gasp at the moment. Just like, oh.
Yeah.
Just because it is a little, you know, in a movie that is kind of ridiculous already, that's the most ridiculous thing, like by far.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought they earned it. They got to that point where I was like, I buy it. I like this.
Well, I couldn't remember watching this again because it had been since like high school since I've watched this. I couldn't remember. I knew the eventuality of him riding the bomb, but I didn't remember how it led up to that point. And I was like, is he just going to go down there and ride the bomb? Is that what's going to happen? I can't remember. And then seeing everything that occurred up until that point and all the like, oh man, the bomb doors aren't working. What are we going to do? And him going down there, it kind of builds up to the point where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm okay with this. And I think it's
well,
because
you're kind of rooting for those guys.
Yeah, a little bit.
You're with them all, you know, and they're like, oh, they got this job through. You're kind of rooting for them. You want them to get their, you know, drop the bombs.
Yeah. They're working so hard, and they got that can-do spirit. You know,
American. Those boys could get right in there and fly it right down. And, you know, they're burning chickens in the barnyard.
And Major Kong comes to terms with his final arrangement, like, very quickly.
Oh yeah.
He goes from I'm falling to whooping and hollering.
He's down there, he's sweating. He's like trying to fix this thing and he's really trying hard. Mm-hmm. So when he does, he's like, whoa, and he kind of like is surprised for a second.
Yeah. And he can't lose his lucky hat, so he grabs onto it and he's like, the next logical thing is to start whooping.
And there's like handle right there for him to hang on to too, which is very, very nice.
Yeah, convenient. It's like, I wonder why that handle's there. Yeah.
But it's sort of like that's an image. That's pure cinema. Like an image like that of a guy with a cowboy hat riding an atom bomb.
It's like, I wonder if that's like the sort of image that pops into somebody's head and that's when they're like, I need to write a movie about that image.
Yeah.
This one was based off a book, right?
Apparently, yeah. The opening credit was like
it's called Red Alert, I want to say.
Red Alert. There was actually a whole bunch of atomic war movies around this time. Mm-hmm. Another one called Failsafe, which was a TV movie.
I was going to ask you about Failsafe, actually.
Which I saw in high school. They showed it to me because it was still in the Cold War when I was in high school. And they still had to like worry about, you know, there was still a Soviet Union then.
It's got like kind of a similar plot to this.
It's a very similar plot. It's got more actors. Like every actor in it is someone from TV who, you know, like Larry Hagman, who was JR from Dallas. He's the interpreter. I think like Jack Klugman is in it. And what's his name from Smokey and the Band? Not Smokey and the Bandit. From Dom DeLuise is in it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's the guy who like comes in and fixes the circuit. Yeah. Basically, a circuit blows.
I haven't seen it in forever.
And it's just super good. And Henry Fonda is the president in that one. Yeah, same thing. Where all these planes are going to their failsafe point, and something goes wrong, and this one goes past its failsafe point, and they're not able to call it back, and it's going to go in, and the president. Same thing. He has to call the Russian and try to like avert nuclear war.
Tell him to shoot down our own plane. Yeah.
Well, no, there's only the one plane that's going in there and it's going to make it. So he has this colonel, this American colonel with another bomb, fly over New York City and like stand by. And they got the ambassador on the phone. He says, well, if you hear this high pitched sound, that'll be his phone melting in Moscow. That means the bomb went off. And that means we have to drop a bomb on New York.
This is a spoiler alert again.
Yeah, spoiler. You're not going to go. No one's going to go watch Failsafe. But then, you know, they end up dropping the bomb on New York at the same time. The American bomb they drop on New York.
Talking about shocking endings.
No, I know. Very, like, horrifying.
It's pretty crazy. Especially if you'd seen it back then. I can't even imagine.
Oh, yeah. And it makes you think, oh, boy, nuclear weapons are really bad. That would totally suck if that happened. You know, how would we deal with that, you know?
Not to put too fine a point on it, but it would suck.
It would totally so suck.
It would be a real drag, to say the least.
Yeah.
At the very least.
I think that would be the presidential address, like New York up blown up, and guys, this sucks.
This totally sucks.
It's like, if you think it sucks for you, I mean, imagine my job right now.
But like the pilot who like drops the bomb on New York, he drops the bomb, and then he like takes this capsule, then he kills himself immediately. He like takes the cyanide capsule.
Oh wow.
You know, because he's not gonna go and like answer for this. You know,
yeah,
it's real intense.
It's
TV
super
movie,
intense.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know if it was a TV movie. I think it was shown on TV. It was shot on film. I think it was cut and edited together and everything.
Sounds super good. Super interesting.
Come
like
to think of
it,
I saw that. Yeah. I think George Clooney remade it a few years ago. It was a live TV event, which I don't know why.
That does sound familiar now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, yeah. That was a remake of the one from the 1960s.
Not as well received though, I think.
Well, it was a blip.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was also retro. It was like, okay, here's a story from 40 years ago, you know, which is maybe not as germane. We're just showing off being George Clooney and doing cool TV now, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about Kubrick specifically and his style. Steven, you'd mentioned before that we went to the Kubrick Museum and you saw the model that was in color, the colorized model of the war room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember hearing this anecdote sometime about how Kubrick insisted that everything that was shot on film be colorized to his very strict standards, that the war room had to be painted this exact way, even though he knew it was going to be a black and white film. It's just, you know, again, he's kind of a crazy director. He's just kind of a crazy dude. But this attention to detail really comes across, not quite in how it was colored, but it's certainly a beautifully shot movie.
Yeah.
And it's you know, very... What's the word? He's obviously an auteur. You know, he's
absolutely
he has everything completely under his control, which is kind of insane to think about these days when you have these $150-300 million movies being made, and there's just absolutely no way that Joss Whedon can oversee every little detail coloring decision of Avengers: Age of Ultron, you know.
Yeah.
But
he probably can. He probably does, actually. I mean, when you make a film, any feature film only has 2 hours of shots in it, you know. And so you're, and like when you make a film, you go in and color time it, and they print it, and you go, okay, that scene, make that less blue, make that more green, make that darker.
For sure.
Shot by shot, and you go in and do it 5 or 6 times on a shitty $500,000 movie. You know, on Age of Ultron, they probably do it 100,000 times, and the director's there for all of it.
Yeah.
that he wants to be. You know, nothing's going to slip by, you know, because nothing, I doubt that Joss Whedon, there's anything that he wants he doesn't get to have on Age of Ultron, you know, unless maybe there was some casting thing.
Yeah.
Well, especially considering the success of the previous one, you'd think that, like, if anything kind of slipped the net before, it's like, all right, well, you made us this much money, so now it's
almost,
you.
I think that's a bad thing. I think most great directors do their best work when there's someone kind of riding them.
Yeah,
and there's someone kind of going, no, George, no, let's cut it down a little bit. No, you don't need that scene twice. No, George, you know what I mean? I'm talking about George Lucas.
Yeah,
yes,
I was actually just about to say, oh, you mean like George Lucas in the original Star Wars?
Oh, George Lazenby,
like,
the second James Bond, obviously. No,
when Fox was like, we can't. This movie's not going to go anywhere. You got to have half your budget or something.
Star Wars cost $11 million. 11. That's it.
Yeah,
it costs more to make an episode of.
Is
like,
that with inflation?
Well, that's how many dollars it cost. Yeah. If you inflated it, it'd be like 10 times that probably. Okay. But still, I don't know. 5 times that? I don't know. A gallon of gas cost 35 cents back then.
Yeah.
So that's 10 times as much, right?
Is that our... The movie industry and the gas industry pretty much go up and inflate
at
the same
time. I don't know, but I wonder, you know? Like when I was in college in the 80s, you could buy a can of beer for 25 cents. There was a beer you could get for a quarter. Now there's a beer you can get for a dollar.
There's a place like 4X. I used to go to that did bingo in Austin. We did a short film about bingo that had quarter beer Fridays. They were like trying really hard to get the college demo in there. And it was really just the film crew and me. Like, it never caught on. But I was like, guys, quarter beer.
I'm
amazing.
Yeah, like,
amazing.
The film crew was like, they started being like, you guys want to hang out at the bingo? I know we're not shooting tomorrow, but.
Wait, quarter beer in a bar?
Bingo. It was a bingo hall.
A bingo parlor?
Yeah.
Fun. You can't even get that in the grocery anymore.
I'd play drunk bingo any day.
It was actually, they had a lot of fun. I want to talk a little bit more about Stanley Kubrick and his meticulous, but kind of a different aspect of it. Was he, I'm trying to remember from the museum exhibit, was he a war photographer at one point?
Boy, I'm shady on his biography. I don't really have it. But he's made, some of his biggest movies have been war movies.
Yeah. Like, I want to say he might have.
Have you got the IMDb cracked open?
I'll pull it up here in a sec.
But no, he shoots a lot himself. There's always like the handheld stuff. He almost always does himself. You always see shots of him with this little Arri 2C, you know, which is this little handheld camera, which is like the size of a coffee pot. You know, it's, it's pretty big by now standards.
Yeah,
but very loud. Like he shot a lot of the scenes in like the rape scenes in Clockwork Orange with that, like with a really wide lens and getting right in there himself. But he's a very interesting cat, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I heard like you were saying, Ryan, like just how meticulous he was. I hear that in The Shining, actually, he insisted that the drawers be filled with clothes, even though they would never be opened. You know, it's just the such a sort crazy of things person. Like that. But it's like it's kind of like genius and kind of insanity are two sides of the same coin, they say. And I feel like it's apparent with him particularly.
If only Charles Manson had gone into movies.
Maybe it would have been a different story.
I know.
Maybe he did. So, dun, dun, dun!
Kubrick started as a freelance photographer. He sold a series to Look magazine in the 1940s. I don't see anything about a wartime photographer, though.
Well, he would have been the right age to be in World War II.
Yeah. Well, I must have been confusing him with someone else, just because some of the shots of the skirmish at the army base, you know, seemed kind of like war photographer esque, you know, down in the trenches, kind of peeking your camera.
Well, we were talking
over.
About that. That's exactly what they were going for. I mean, they studied, you know, the real deal, and they wanted to make it look as realistic as possible. So to differentiate it from all the really studio looking stuff like the war room, you know, in the trenches, this feels really real, even though this is like a military base in wherever.
It's almost like you could take the two apart and call them, you know, parts of different movies or different films.
Oh, sure.
Certainly get away with. But like if you showed someone this clip, you're like, this is from one movie you showed.
Yeah, I would have believed it. Yeah. Absolutely. Especially considering the lighting too. You know, it's just like all flat and just natural for the outside, the exterior shots.
Yeah, and if they're all shots that you'd have to grab. There were no like set up shots of like here's a beautiful shot of this guy shooting a gun or anything. Well, there was a couple shots earlier where they're talking about attacking. Mm. Where they're saying, boy, those trucks sure look realistic. Boy, those Ruskies sure are smart or whatever. That's a couple of actual looking shots. Mm. But then when they're actually fighting, it just seems like, you know, they're the shot you would get in the real situation with very little setup. Same thing in the plane, which is pretty cool.
Can we just talk about our favorite Kubrick movies?
Sure.
We want to go around? I think this, we already know yours.
Yeah, but I had to guess. Strangelove, that's my favorite Kubrick movie.
For me, it would have to be probably Apocalypse Now. Have any of you guys seen it?
I watched that.
That's Stanley Kubrick.
Is it not?
No, that's Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. What was I thinking?
You're thinking of Full Metal Jacket.
That's it. Absolutely my favorite Kubrick, yeah.
Oh, you're not thinking of Apocalypse Now? It's got the helmet that says Born to Kill.
No, I know.
Okay.
I've seen them both, but yeah, that movie's amazing. And I remember watching a video series. This is kind of how I learned that Kubrick was so crazy, explaining all of the symbolism and imagery and photography in Full Metal Jacket, and I just was deeply amazed and wondering how any one person could keep track of all of this in their head. And I absolutely believe that it wasn't an accident, that he is fully in control of.
Oh yeah, he was fully in control. He was like at the peak of his skills back then. That was in the 90s, I guess, right?
Full Metal Jacket.
No, it was like
87. I want to say it was early.
It was like 87. Yeah. I was teaching at Northwestern. Because I remember I was teaching the summer program at Northwestern, and I saw it the day it ended, after all the kids had left. Mm. And I went by myself because I'm going to see this Kubrick movie. And I'd been teaching film for like 5 weeks, intensive, talking about Steadicams and shots and wide shots and close-ups. And so every shot, I was like, okay, that's a close-up. That's a wide angle. That's a Steadicam shot. I was just like deconstructing every technical thing. So I didn't really get into it that much. But I dug it, though. Mm-hmm. Okay. Especially the first half when they're training.
It is kind of two movies in one.
Yeah. Right?
And I would say the first half is my favorite as well.
Oh yeah, Vincent D'Onofrio, right?
The two sort of short films that is Full Metal Jacket, the first one. I do prefer the first one.
All right, what's your
James?
Favorite?
How about you, guys?
I actually haven't watched enough Kubrick. Like I said, I actually mentioned it before the podcast. I was going to go see a film print of 2001: Space Odyssey. at the Arc Light the other day, and it got canceled. And I was really bummed about that because I was already halfway there, and I was like super amped, and I'd been saving it for like a viewing experience like that. So
was it a 75 millimeter print?
I believe so.
I got to see one of those back in Austin actually a few years ago.
I think they were, it was actually strike action by the projectionists.
Wow.
So they weren't like,
oh no.
Yeah. So
they ruined
it
for you.
I think I remember that happening though. I know when you're talking about it.
Yeah. So I was actually going to go see it with a buddy of mine, and we were both pretty bummed about that. But so I still haven't seen that movie, but I would have to say that my favorite of the ones that I have seen is The Shining, mm-hmm. just because every time I watch it, I'm just blown away by every aspect of it. And I'd say that it's probably one of the few movies that I'd say is better than the book.
Okay.
Because I have read the book, and I didn't really dig the ending.
And Stephen King would disagree with you.
He would, and he did. He did do like a
mini series, and everyone's like, "This isn't even.
This is not as good."
Yeah. Yeah.
So. That's the film where they invented the Steadicam.
Yeah, actually.
Or started using the Steadicam.
My dad actually mentioned when he first saw that in theaters, he was also film, and he had never seen anything like it. And he was just like, he said he was terrified, but whenever they used the Steadicam, he's like, oh man, that's incredible. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So.
I'm not the hugest Kubrick fan. I have seen more of his movies than I realized. I was just okay on Full Metal Jacket. I didn't love The Shining as much as everyone else does. I did really enjoy Dr. Strangelove, but I saw A Clockwork Orange for the first time late last year, and I loved it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that has to be my favorite one. And honestly, I'm probably going to go back and rewatch a bunch of his movies now and just see if I am just smarter now to be able to understand them, because I was a lot younger when I watched The Shining in 2001, which I really didn't like, and Full Metal Jacket.
I haven't seen Clockwork Orange, but I've read the book, and the book was fantastic. So,
well, the movie is Clockwork Orange. When I used to teach that summer program, I would always have to take a second look, because kids would write an application, and they wrote, "What's your favorite film?" And then why? They'd write an essay about that. And they always had me check the kids who wrote Fight Club or Clockwork Orange to make sure that they weren't like
insane,
like sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they actually were talking about it filmically. They just think all the rapes were really cool.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
I think this character understands
so cool.
me, man.
When he rapes that chick and the thing is so, you know, you got to be, okay, that guy you don't want to come to your summer
program.
Right. You know.
No, what I loved about that movie was like just the entire theme of like, you're fighting against someone's true nature. You're like conditioning them to not be the way that they really are.
Yeah.
Even if it's forcing them to like be morally a better person, watching the way, was it Malcolm McDowell?
Yeah. Malcolm McDowell.
Watching the way he played that was
so good.
So good. Yeah.
And where the happy ending is they turn him back into a sociopath.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's this happy ending, and everyone comes in, and it's this jolly happy ending.
Yeah.
And all these people have been killed and, you know, messed up, and
yeah.
It's just such a strange movie because
it is.
Like you're laughing along with all the worst things and enjoying all these horrible things. And it's so interesting.
I was appalled through so much of it.
But then it's this beautiful classical musical playing
No, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's such an experience.
But yeah, that's a good one. But the thing is, that was my favorite one when I saw it. It was my favorite one by a damn sight, because it was the only one I'd seen. Yeah. It was one of my favorite movies altogether when I was, you know, 19.
Right.
And then, you know, now I've seen a lot more movies. Now I kind of go, yeah, it's pretty amazing. But I still, you know, would rather watch many other things first.
Mm-hmm. I'm not clamoring to see it again soon.
Right.
But I
should,
will.
Though. It's definitely some great stuff in
there.
I had the soundtrack in my car for years.
Oh, wow. I'm going to kind of echo what James said. My favorite Kubrick film is The Shining. I mean, just the imagery is so vivid in that movie. I mean, the carpet pattern alone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's burned into my head after watching that movie. And
that's
just
actually what I judge most movies on, is
the carpet
patterns.
Yeah. That's actually how I judge how haunted a hotel
is. Oh, yeah, by the carpet. That's, well, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I in real life really wouldn't stay in a hotel with that carpet. Actually, no, I would think it's kind of cool, but I'd be a little uneasy going to
that's
sleep.
That's actually a very nice hotel.
Yeah.
You can rent a tricycle.
I could rent a tricycle, get some twins to
I
just
wonder, does that hotel
out?
Exist? That's still there. You can go stay in that. I wonder if they have like big wheels that you could like have one in the lobby.
They're
like,
missing out.
In a glass box.
I know Luke Skywalker's home is a hotel in Tunisia, and I have a goal to stay there at some point.
I heard that ISIS had like
yeah
messed it up.
No,
I heard about right? that.
ISIS bastards.
And Bruce.
Now wow, it's next. Personal.
What's next? New Zealand? Are they going to take out Hobbiton too?
Yeah, no more Shire.
Yeah, Hobbiton.
Hobbiton.
Okay,
the town. Of Hobbits. The Shire.
Town. The Hobbit. The Shire.
Call it the Shire.
The Hobbiton is
it's called
town.
Hobbiton.
It's part of the Shire.
The Shire right? is like yeah. geographically, and Hobbiton is the community.
Yeah, oh. you dumbass.
That's the spirit. Fight! 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 Fight!
We know what James's trigger
There's
is.
There's no
now.
Fighting in the podcast room.
Gentlemen, you can't fight it here. This is the podcast.
There's a quick cut on the video after that. I'm sorry, I get very defensive about Tolkien.
Oh, yeah? Are you a big Tolkien,
Tolkien
fan?
Yeah. I'm actually not the biggest, like, I'm not as big as some of my friends, but it's like, I know for a fact. I've read The Silmarillion. I know a
Whoa.
Few things.
You're the one.
I actually have a hardcover first edition of The Silmarillion.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's awesome.
I thought you were going to say, I actually have a hard-on when I think of The Silmarillion.
It's like, I've got a hard-on when I read
it. Both those things are true.
No, no, that's Steven.
We may have strayed a little bit from.
You know, I don't really care for those movies, Frame.
Really?
Those Lord
the
of
the Hobbit. I hated The Hobbit.
The
Hobbits
Hobbit,
were
I
like
The Lord of the Rings. I saw one and a half of The Hobbit ones.
They weren't very good.
And then The Lord of the Rings, oh, so long. I like
oh
the
my,
second one.
Okay. Okay. Ryan, like, exactly. They are just so long.
Yeah.
I said last time we recorded,
but
I'm sorry,
amazing.
No movie should be 3 hours. I'm about to rewatch them. Like, I can be like, all right, yeah, okay, the directing is good, and the visuals, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And I can,
so everything's
I can,
great about this movie,
but... I just don't like it. It's like the difference between your favorite movie and the best movie, how they can be two different things. I'm like, yes, this is a great movie. I will almost never watch
like,
it.
If you watch The Matrix again, like on a plane, or you just catch it, it'll hook you in, and you'll be like, with it, every second, you're like, yes, 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 yes. Every thing they do pushes the story forward. Every line of dialogue. Just the first Matrix, you know? Mm. But like Lord of the Rings, the King one, the last one, the one the Oscar, right? I saw that on HBO recently. I was like waiting to go out. I thought, well, we'll just watch this. It's got to be over soon. They're having the battle, right? And it was nope. like another hour and a half. And it's like it ended. Then it ended again. Then it ended again. Then there were ghosts. And there was more people. It was just like, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Finish.
The third one wasn't my favorite. But just because of what you just mentioned, it seemed like it just kind of ended. It ended. It ended.
Yeah,
it ended.
God, yeah.
I was just in tears for the last hour of that movie.
Yeah, Ryan actually.
That's actually my favorite one.
Yeah. Ryan recently went to go see it in New York because the symphony was doing the score live, which is pretty cool.
That's so cool.
But I was like, oh, you mean I have to be stuck in a theater and watch that? Like, if I'm at home, I can at least pause it and stretch, you know?
And he saw all three.
All three?
In one week.
2 days.
Oh, my Lord. God almighty.
Oh, that's nothing. I've done all three
in a day, right?
All three straight, yeah.
I could do all three standing on my head. No, I couldn't.
Hey, that's the next, that's the final frontier of Lord of the Rings watching, I think.
Yeah.
Hopefully I won't pass out.
Yeah, those, exactly.
I wouldn't want to miss a second. I wouldn't want to miss a second of those 12 hours of amazing movies.
You see, I don't watch movies over and over again. I have a lot of favorite movies that I love, like Back to the Future on your poster here, the Star Wars trilogy. It never occurs to me to put those in and watch them. They'll come to me at some point. Yeah. They'll be on in a lobby or something.
They're like the movies.
There's a very small group of movies that I watch repeatedly.
Yeah.
At this age, I used to like when my childhood was just repeatedly watching the same movie, and now I'm like, there's so much I haven't seen.
Oh yeah.
And also, most of what I watch is TV shows.
And it dulls the experience when you start rewatching it over and over. At least when you get older, because in high school, I used to have the Star Wars trilogy on repeat, but then. You know,
you start picking it apart too. I feel it.
Yeah, and it gets to the point where you're like, okay, I'm essentially playing this in my head. So why am I watching? It's nice to forget details and then rediscover it like it's new, all over again.
That's like It's a Wonderful Life, my favorite film. I don't watch it in between Christmases. You know, I wait until it's like the right time when I can actually see all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to catch it in the middle. I'll try to catch it at the beginning and just really sit there and watch it with no commercials. You know, some proper screening environment, because that movie just makes me cry 6 times every time. And whatever age you're at, that movie, you cry different scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're young, you cry because he can't go on his trip. And then only you cry because he's got the wife.
Spoiler free for me. I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, we should do some Christmas theme.
Yeah, we're
going to
wait until Christmas time.
Yeah.
Wow, we may have...
You can have Christmas in July. You could flip it upside down and really bring it.
Can I just say that, by the way, for... podcast listeners who can't see this, James and Michael are just the cutest thing ever right now.
Aw, they're so snuggly.
You can see it on the video.
They're snuggling in and sharing a microphone.
Yeah.
But you can watch it on
And they're shirtless. So if you're listening to this, you should definitely go find the YouTube clip.
And if you're watching the YouTube clip, you know he's bluffing.
Or do you?
Yeah. Maybe later on things get
maybe a this
steamy.
Was a second take. Yeah. Maybe this was reconstructed.
Maybe the guy's like, guys, too weird. Put the shirts back on, yeah. Please. So we can get at least a couple of takes.
One more time, fully clothed.
We'll shirtless again.
You got to check the time code, just like in newsroom. Exactly. What really happened.
So any final thoughts before we rate here? Just to get back to,
we went a
Dr.
little...
Strangelove.
Wait, Dr. what now?
We're talking about Dr. Strangelove.
Wow.
Or
I got no thoughts.
To stop wearing
what a memory that was.
I would say that ultimately, I think when I watched this movie the first time, that was around the time I was also reading Catch 22, and there are so many things that are similar about those two military lampoon sorts of things. And I would say that the strongest part for me was just how wacky the characters were without being completely off the wall. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying,
Other than not being able to control your hand doing a Nazi salute.
Yeah, that's probably the most insane. But
it's also pretty funny.
It was hilarious.
It's great.
He looked like he was constipated the entire time he was on camera.
Yeah, and he's just and actually the ambassador who's in the shot behind him, you could see him break. He's smiling and kind of looking away and getting, gets together and frowns again. But you could totally see him back.
But I mean, it's just a delight every time you see somebody on screen. I don't think I disliked any characters, and I think that really lends so much strength to the story and is why I'm okay with listening to these long, drawn-out conversations between whoever. Even Dimitri, who's not on camera, has a character.
I love only hearing half of the conversation. Yeah. You don't hear what the other person is like. Dimitri.
If you'd calm down, I could
tell
Dimitri.
You.
Dimitri sounds like a super nice prime minister who has a lot of love to give. And, he would appreciate a call every now and then when there's not a crisis.
Is that so hard?
Guys, leading the world is about friendship.
It is. It is. You gotta reach people to lead people. It's true. That's true.
All right. Shall we rate?
Okay. Yeah, how does that work?
You'll see as we do it. Ryan, do you want to get started?
I'll get started. Stanley Kubrick is one of my favorite directors ever, as he is a lot of people's. He's made some of the greatest movies of all time. This among them, I believe. And I'm going to have to give it an A.
A.
A. I'll go next. Kubrick is a very complex filmmaker, and I'm really starting to enjoy his stuff. So I am going to go back and watch the movies I have seen and didn't care for as much, because I just think I wasn't smart enough before. I'm going to start calling him Rubik's Kubrick.
that's not going to catch on.
I'm just going to do it.
It would have by now.
I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a blast.
And your rating is?
Do you get it? Because it's
no,
a bomb?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did not get it. Thank
okay.
you. Slow it down.
I am also going to give it an A, but I was very close to giving it an A+.
Ooh.
But I didn't.
Well, I'm going to jump the gun and go ahead and give it an A+.
Ooh, we're above the 4.0.
Yeah, I was picking it apart as I watched it, and it, again, been a while since I'd seen it last, but everything about it was just entertaining, and I really couldn't find anything wrong with it, and I think that goes for a lot of Kubrick's films, and it's probably just because he's totally insane, but I'm gonna give it an A+.
Excellent.
Oh, wow.
This was just a super solid movie. I can't find a single flaw. Camera work, writing, everything is on point, no gaps. The acting is hilarious. It's both serious in certain parts and funny in the other, and there's a great escalation. I would have given it an A+. The only thing it's missing is something that would just blow me away, to where I'd be like wow, I'm gonna rethink stuff. Like that's
it's
what
it's about
A+
a bomb.
That was a good
it
one.
Did yeah.
No,
blow
I think that was a lot
away.
Better than Michael's.
I wasn't even trying to make it that pun, but
I know,
I'm glad I
tell.
Did. But yeah, it just gets a super solid A. Amazing film.
Well, I'm going to give it an A as well, because I'm supposed to finish with that. So, spoiler, A. I would say A+. There's not a thing wrong with it. I love it. I just feel like there are movies that I like better than it. And I think you maybe want to just have reserve the A+ for the just super profound experiences.
Exactly.
Can I give it an A-ish plus? Like a 4.2?
Yeah.
Like it looks like a minus, 2? But it's really just the base for a plus.
An
A plus.
Can I give it like a, is it a graduate? Is it like, because A plus would be 4.5, right?
No.
I
never got a 4.5 in my life.
All averages to an A.
Oh.
Yeah.
So from all our grades, we had 3 A's and A+, and then in between A and A+. So.
Yeah, so that's all right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Can we give it an A-ish?
A-ish.
I'll tell you, the only negative I have now after watching it again is the DVD copy that I have. That's my DVD. It's kind of not a great DVD.
Yeah.
Because it's 4:3. It's Academy aspect ratio. And the film, I'm pretty sure, is not 4:3. I'm pretty
it's a little letterboxed
1.85
yeah.
film. And it's just a little film lesson here. Films are made in the Academy aspect ratio on film traditionally from like the 50s through the 90s, through the 2000s, really. You shoot full frame, Academy aspect ratio, the full film frame, and then they crop it down in the viewfinder and in the projector. But you're still exposing above and below the frame that you're shooting. So if you go to the cinema sometimes, they get it adjusted wrong. Mm-hmm. And what if you're projecting on film and you'll see too much headroom or too much, you know, chin room or whatever. You'll see the dolly track sometimes. You'll see the microphone sometimes. And in this, there are certain scenes where there's like black at the top or the bottom, like the matte box, right, which are outside. I think they have to be outside the shot, right?
Yeah.
But then other shots where there's nothing there and it's just exposed top to bottom, like in the credits and other places like that. But I noticed the credits were kind of not reaching the bottom of the frame. They were sort of high and weird. So make sure you get an actual... This DVD is probably 15 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a pre-16:9 deal. So get a Blu-ray or a digital download of Dr. Strangelove, I would say.
What's your take on VHS? Steven preferred format.
Oh, really? Oh, well, I still have a VHS deck. I just bought a new one last year, actually.
Oh, wow. All right.
Because my old one, because I had one that I had for years. It was like a really good one, and then it crapped out.
Yeah.
And I had a client who wanted me to take something off a VHS
and,
you know, suck it into the computer,
yeah.
and it just wouldn't turn anymore. And I have this banker's box in my desk full of, like, the last 20 VHSs in my life that I wanted to transfer, like old films I've done and stuff like that. And I'm not all the way through it yet. So like, God damn it, I got to buy this.
Yeah.
Because I could bill clients for it and take them. But I could actually, it's got a DVD player and a VHS player in it.
Yeah.
And now I've got the cool thing. It's a box for recording video game play for YouTube.
Yeah.
And I plug that into my VHS and I can digitize a VHS. I can digitize a DVD.
Look at that.
No trouble at all. No rights management nonsense, you know. So when some people come to me with the movie that they're in for their reel, I can rip the scene and give it to them so much easier than Handbrake or any other nonsense.
Yeah.
And if you're the FCC, this is not for profit.
This is all comedy. You know, everything's taken comedically. I'm glad you brought up that aspect ratio stuff. I know I mentioned before I'm a stickler. You guys should check out a video Mark did with
Professor
Pup Film School all about aspect ratio because he dives completely into it and it's something people get so wrong, or at least they used to when it was still 4:3 or 16:9. Mm-hmm. Now it all seems to be 16:9. But go check it out. Do yourself a favor and you might save yourself a couple of video hiccups in the future.
But don't go quite yet because we're just about to get into a...
Challenge. Is that the bomb?
Dun 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 dun.
Challenge.
Dun 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 dun. Okay, this is on me now. I've got to come up with a challenge for you guys. Like, do I challenge you to? Okay.
Yes.
Fight.
Go.
I fight with my words, with my knowledge.
I literally stab James in the head.
Okay, third, second, first.
Perfect.
All right.
Thanks for watching, everyone.
No, I could go up with a challenge for you. The thing I thought of, this film has, it's supposed to be germane to the film, like a, it seems to be like improv exercises, really. Right? Sort of?
Something like that.
Yeah. Have a one-sided phone conversation.
That's what my back was going to be if you couldn't come up with one, is one-sided phone convo.
Well, great minds think alike, as do we. So, why don't you, I don't know who goes first or how we do this, but why don't you have a one-sided phone conversation with a world leader apologizing for and warning them about some horrible thing your country is doing to them right now. So who wants to go first?
Oh, man.
I guess I'll give it a shot. If
yeah.
I'm just going to wing it here.
Bada bing.
Ooh, props.
If I, I've got a phone.
Steve. No.
Oh, it's not the prop phone.
It's not the prop phone.
Okay. Oh boy, I can't believe that this is actually happening. And all right, I just got to get this conversation over with. Yes, hi, Sergey. Hi, Sergey. Yes, yes, I know. We have a secret phone handshake that we do, but this is an emergency, Sergey. Sergey, we don't have time. Okay. Pow, pow, pow. Pow, pow. Pow, pow, pow. Okay, Sergey. Oh, yes, it really is me, Sergey. Sergey, what do I have to do to prove this to you? Sergey, I remembered your birthday, Sergey. I promise you, I remembered your birthday. I told you, I sent you flowers and chocolate. They got lost. I sent them via FedEx, which is usually a great American company that I will wholeheartedly support. Something went wrong this time. Most likely on your end. No offense. Listen, Sergey, don't cry. Don't cry, Sergey. I promise they're on their way, okay? I was lying before. I didn't actually send you anything. Don't worry, they're on their way. But we have more important things to discuss, Sergey. Please, if you would listen to me. Sergey. Sergey, did you just fall asleep, Sergey? Sergey, wake up.
All right, who's next?
Yep. You need the prop phone.
Oh, prop phone, of course. I mean, my phone works. But...
Do you want to award points in between each one or at the very end for everyone?
I'm going to have to I have to rank in order, I think.
Okay.
Like Chris Hardwick do.
Okay.
Like Chris Hardwick, okay.
Like Chris Hardwick do.
Man, he always screens calls. I can't believe this. Oh, hey, how's it going? Yeah, you know who this is, buddy. Okay, listen, this is not gonna be an easy conversation that we're gonna have. All right, I need you to calm down. Yes, we're still on for Saturday. So you know that how I was sending a bunch of Red Cross hippies to go send you some supplies. Your country's starving, dude. We need to talk about that. First of all, country's starving. We were going to send them some food, some supplies, some water. And by the way, we're footing the bill. You don't have to worry about it. But little mix-up. We sent a whole bunch. We dropped a lot of anthrax on your villages and your cities. I'm sure if you click on the TV, I know you don't believe in TV, but if you click it on, you will see that all of your cities are covered in anthrax. Well, don't blame me. I was trying to help you. You're the one who doesn't feed your civilians. I mean, okay. All right. Well, we're going to figure something out. I don't know. What is there a cure for anthrax? We have some scientists working on it, but I'm actually not sure what the deets are. Yeah. Yeah, so maybe instead you should come over to the States, stateside. We can cool off, have a couple of beers, bro out like we used to. All right? Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about them. I'm sure they'll be fine. Okay. I love you too.
All right. I'm actually going to ask for my phone back because I need to research. Michael, you're up.
I don't have a phone!
Yeah, we all have six phones.
I found one. I found one, guys.
I like how no one is able to do this anymore. Put your thumb in your ear and your pinky in your mouth.
He described for the listening
audience. It's really hard to speak with my pinky in my mouth. He likes to wait till the third ring.
Brock! Hey, buddy. Look, I know you're mad that we seceded, but, come on, dude. It's not a big problem. We're basically located where we've always been. You know where to find us. I know Michelle doesn't like it. Don't worry about it, though. Look, I have some bad news, okay? Mitt's been riding my ass. Mr. Romney has a very specific platform, and
Look, unless you can give us cheaper gas, we are going to stop exporting barbecue. No, trust me. I know it's a bummer. I am... Barack. All right, you're being childish now. Don't put on Luther your anger translator. That's ridiculous. Hi, Luther. I can't talk to him when he's like this.
All right.
Scene.
All
right. I don't know why there's no video right now. Okay. Hello, yes? Sabi, yes, it's Steven. No, you remember, Steven, I've been on the phone several times over the last month. Yes, I know about ISIS. I know we promised you all that aid, but I need to check. No. Okay, look. I set the priority here. First things first. I need to check Luke Skywalker's home. Is it still there? What? Yes, this does change things. Okay? All right? Okay. You promised if I sent my men over there, I would be guaranteed a week in Luke Skywalker's home. But the contract has clearly been changed if I can't go there now. Okay? All right? Look, we're just going to... Yep. Okay. Yep, we're just going to have to pull out. No, the pod race set will not replace it. Okay? I don't care. All right? Luke Skywalker's home or nothing. Goodbye.
Ring, 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 ring.
May the force be with you.
Ring, ring.
Yes.
Hey, look, we just got word that an actual Tatooine does exist, and we can actually give you a week there.
There better be blue milk, damn it.
I was going to say Jawas. I'll take it.
Oh, wait. Bad news. Looks like it. ISIS is here.
Oh, zing. Wow. So what's their point scale, or is that up to me as well?
Totally. You could give points, or you could say who you got first, second, third, fourth.
You can hand out ribbons.
I think I would have to give the award for most inventive idea to Steven, talking about the thing.
The guy is the president of Tunisia.
Because I knew no one. He did like a second's research there. I figured that out. So 1,000 points for you there. And and then I think to James, I'm going to give you 995 points. For
you're looking at me, but you said James.
Michael.
There you go.
Sorry. So 995 points, because also funny. Texas, I guess, has succeeded.
Yes.
Excellent. Then I'll give each of you guys 950 points.
Yes.
So it's very close. It's anyone's game.
And it's also worth noting that you had given me 10 points over there earlier.
Interesting.
Before the podcast started.
Which puts you at...
1,005 points.
Oh! It's still very close.
It is.
It's still very close. And the judges are extremely capricious.
Yeah.
I don't know what that word means.
If anyone could define capricious for 15 points right now.
Capricious is kind of...
James the wordsmith over there.
I actually do know what capricious means, but I can't think of the actual definition right now.
On the tip of your tongue.
Anybody?
I can tell you what it
can change on a dime.
I can tell you what a caprese salad is.
Oh, I thought you say caprese sun.
Do you mean a caprese salad?
Yeah.
Caprese.
I was trying to make it sound closer.
I'm wearing capris right now.
You have capri pants. You're capricious in your capri pants. Your caprese salad.
So I guess is that our final points recap? Since we typically
sounds like it.
And the point. So I guess
does that mean Michael wins.
Michael wins.
Wow.
Bragging rights or something.
Oh, you guys, it's never gonna end.
Congratulations.
It still hasn't.
Out of
ended.
Nowhere.
You earned it.
I thought Steven had it on that. It there. Yeah.
Even researching the president of Tunisia.
All right.
Guys, the difference between us is you guys do a movie podcast and I do a win the challenge podcast. That
really
is my
is
main concern.
All right.
Well,
so that takes us out of the challenge and to our normal wrap up bits.
Back to reality.
Speaking of back.
There goes gravity.
Just a reminder, our next podcast is going to be my pick, the Back to the Future episode. I got this lovely poster behind me right now if you're watching on video. And just a reminder of the question for the next podcast I want you to answer is, who would you take with you on a time travel adventure? Usually people say, who would you go time travel to meet? I want to know who you take with you.
So wait, you're going to... What kind of rock are you under if you haven't seen Back to the Future? Come on.
Well, we've all seen it. backstory, the premise of this podcast began because Michael hadn't seen the movie, and we all said, we gotta show you this movie.
Yeah.
So we showed him the movie, and then the idea for the podcast came after that.
Was he like, did he just shit his pants? Was he like, yeah, it's okay?
What was your reaction?
We'll find out.
Oh, that's what we call a tease. So ooh, tune in next time.
What a pro broadcaster.
Look at that. I mean, usually Ryan asks, hey, what's up with Hyperdrive?
Hey, what's up with Hyperdrive, Steven?
I've been thinking of a name. You know how like all these YouTube channels have like names for their audience?
Oh, yeah.
I think the Hyperdrive audience, I think y'all are going to be starfighters. And we all make up the Hyperdrive fleet. That's just something I've been pondering.
Now,
over.
Is this like, are you putting this to a vote or did you, are
nope,
you set?
No, all done.
Ah, really?
Yes.
Are these the last of the Starfighters?
These are the last Starfighters. Every copy of
that
movie.
Doesn't that limit your fan base?
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Starfighters.
It's a thought. I'm trying to think up.
Who hasn't seen Last Starfighter?
I haven't.
I've seen like bits on TV.
Oh man! That's gonna be a pick.
And then
I saw that in theaters.
Not before Wedding Crashers. You don't.
I was just about to say, who hasn't seen Wedding Crashers?
All right. Anyways, Starfighters. That's you guys. That's what I've been thinking of for Hyperdrive. But more importantly, Mark.
Yes.
What can we expect from you soon?
Oh, many things. Many angry things. No. Well, you can find me so many places. You can find me at Mark W. Gray on YouTube, where I do, you know, how-to videos and vlogs and all that jazz. Lately, 360 videos, which you can look at on your Oculus or in your Chrome browser and pan around. And then my primary YouTube, this is it right here. My primary YouTube is Professor Puppet, which you can find at Professor Puppet. And there are many series there, including Hans on Sex, which is all about sex. And also Pocket Film School, where we teach you stuff about film school. It's going to blow. This is my 360 camera
yeehaw!
That I'm trying to turn on.
Yeehaw!
It's full, and I can't quite get it to unfull itself, so I'm not trying to do that. Anyway, Pocket Film School, I've got three more episodes in the pipeline coming out soon on that, about depth of field and focal length and other fundamentals of cinematography. What else? I'm also on another podcast that I just started about a month ago. I joined it about a month ago with Travis Ritchie called Boy Cow Radio. If you don't know Travis Ritchie, he is Inspector Spacetime on Community.
Oh.
And then they made a spin-off like web series of Inspector Spacetime. That's nice. Travis Ritchie. He's a buddy of mine. He's been doing Boy Cow for a while, and it was off for a while, and then he got me on board, and now it's alive again.
Are you saying boycott or
boy cow?
Boy
radio,
cow.
Like,
like cowboy backwards.
Gotcha.
Which I don't know why it's called that. It's ironic because cows are girls, and a boy
cow is a bull.
And it's not even radio. It's a podcast. So... But it's like this. We sit around and we talk about it. Way less structure. We don't have a rundown.
Fancy rundowns.
Or like any format. We said just come in with a few topics and sit and talk about things.
My favorite thing about this episode of the podcast is that Steven was like, we have a guest coming on. We need to get structured. We need to put together like a sheet. And then we get called out for having
a sheet.
And I
immediately
Yeah.
I even gave it away. I was like, Mark, this is the first time we've had this.
Oh, well, it's very professional.
Yeah,
it's very,
I got to feel like a producer again, you know?
I was going to like compliment you on what a good producer you are just from the email you sent me.
Yeah.
Like pre-answering every question I would have about where it is, what time, you know, all that jazz, what I could listen to.
Yes, guy.
I used to do that stuff all the time at TSTV. It felt kind of good to hop into those shoes. Because we're all used to it. We know where to show up every week. It's like clockwork for us.
Yeah. How long have you been doing this?
This podcast?
Yeah. We've done about 35-ish episodes.
We had a couple
but
gaps.
We had probably a 7 or 8 month break.
Do you have a good audience? Do you have listenership? Is there anybody to tell?
We frequently get emails from I believe, Nigerian princes.
Nigerian princes.
Oh!
And,
ears or ears?
Yeah.
I think Charlie Parker emailed us once.
Yeah,
Charlie Parker.
If that's possible.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then a lot of stuff about how to fix our erection problems.
Yeah.
Well, could you forward some of those to me? Because
have you been on the internet? Because it is the easiest thing to find.
It's all over the place.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. Thanks again for listening, guys. Don't forget on iTunes to go ahead and give us a rating and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of From Under a Rock.
Foire.
Ryan, do you want to take us out?
Yeah, that's
to dinner. No,
that's gonna do it for this week's episode. Well, let's go around the table for one last roll call. Let's start over here.
Okay. Hi, I'm James McAnally, aka McDoodles.
I'm Michael Ornelas, aka Mike Bourbon.
I'm Mark W. Gray, a.k.a. Mark W. Gray.
Professor Puppet.
And I'm Steven Zarita, a.k.a. Steven Soup in the Burbs, Suburban Zarita the Jerk.
He's got a lot of nicknames.
Yeah. The Jerk is the one that matters, though.
And I'm Ryan Evans. No nickname required. Thank you once again.
You just hate your nickname. That's the problem.
What's his nickname? What's his nickname?
NPR Ryan Evans.
NPR.
He has a very NPR voice.
I liked Tryon Evans, but that never stuck. He tries.
It's like a shock DJ nickname. Tryon Ryan Evans.
Hey, everybody. This is Tryon Ryan Evans back on the air.
You should be crying Ryan Evans.
Oh! New one. That's the one he's been avoiding.
But for now... I'm Ryan Evans.
All right.
Thank you once again for joining us for another episode of
From Under a Rock.
From Under a Rock. Shit. Sorry.
Oh, almost had it.
Maybe next time.
Wait, there's going to be a next time?